Let's bring this meeting of the Energy Utilities Technology and Communications Committee meeting to order. And let it be noted for the record that we do have a quorum at this point. And today we have only on our agenda the confirmations of three commissioners for the Public Utilities Commission, and one of them to chair the Public Utilities Commission, actually. And I think I'm going to ask all three of you to come to the table together. So Commissioner Boyd, O'Brien, and Wergen. We're having a little confusion here because didn't we just confirm you last year, Commissioner Boyd?
Madam Chair, yes, that was to fill the end of a term due to a resignation. This is now a confirmation hearing for a full six-year term. I was reappointed in January by the governor.
Okay, I thought we've appointed you twice now, but we haven't.
Only once so far, Madam Chair.
Okay, good. Okay. Well, welcome to our committee. Good to have you here. I know that it's been a while, and we've been wanting to get to these confirmations, but we've had quite a lot on our plate this year. And what we'd like from you at this point is basically just to tell us a little bit about yourselves, what brings you to your interest in serving as a commissioner, and what experience you have that prepares you for this. So why don't we start with you, Commissioner Boyd?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not sure that anything has exactly prepared me for this particular job. It's been quite an education over the last year. As you may recall, I'm a chemist by training and taught for 20 years at the University of St. Thomas. My area of research was basic studies tied to solar energy conversion, so my interest in energy or my interest in this type of position comes from my technical studies. And it's really quite an honor to be here today. I think one of the things I've learned in the last year is that with the rise in public prominence of energy issues and with the number of people working to repair or reconstruct our energy system, that there are a lot of learned people involved, and it's quite humbling to be part of that process. A number of things have changed since I was here before you last year. We have a new commissioner in Commissioner Wergen. We've had a change in leadership with the chair. And this rise in, I'd say, public perception of the importance of energy policy has brought a lot of the work we do up to the forefront. And I think several of those things are quite positive. I'll hold my judgment about leadership change and till later. It's been quite a learning experience. It's like doing several new degrees all at once, and I imagine my colleagues would second that notion. The issues that are legal, financial, scientific or technical, public policy all coalesce into one rather mixed, jumbled collection of issues and questions for us to deal with. In terms of the commission itself, I'm happy to report that I think the commission is functioning quite well. We're processing approximately 2,000 filings per year. The commissioners don't always agree with one another, but they do work amicably to resolve differences and come to conclusions that we think are in the best interests of the citizens of the state of Minnesota. Since we last met, I was appointed to the Electricity Committee of the National Association of Regulatory Utility Commissioners, and I've been trying to use my skills to keep the commission abreast of technical areas like spent nuclear fuel, new solar technologies, and carbon capture and sequestration technologies and demonstration projects as they've come to the forefront. Fortunately, we have commissioners of varying interests and strengths, and they work well together in terms of our distribution of work through our regulatory union, so to speak, through NARUC, as well as our work in the commission. And I think that we're well-balanced and functioning reasonably well. The work is extremely challenging. It's very, very rewarding. I think you'll probably hear compliments or comments of that sort from everyone involved. The staff of the commission is extremely good. My colleagues have been very supportive, helping us all come up to speed, and I appreciate that very much. Burl Haar is here, the executive secretary, and we rely on Burl heavily for help in keeping ourselves on course. So my message is that I've enjoyed the work. It's been a challenge. It's been a good challenge and a satisfying opportunity for me, and I would be happy to answer questions if you might have any.
Okay, thank you. You'll note that in front of you are copies of the appointments, the applications, and the resumes of each of the candidates. Any questions at this point? We'll perhaps question all the candidates after we've heard from each of you. So, Commissioner O'Brien, you've been through this before, too.
Yes, thank you, Senator. My name is Dennis O'Brien. I grew up in South Minneapolis. My mother was a school social worker. My dad was a lawyer, an Irish Catholic family. There were seven children. Five of us are lawyers. So I graduated from the University of Minnesota Law School and was on the Attorney General staff for a couple of years. I did legislative work from 1969 through 1983 full-time, principally areas of school finance, but I also did work for social service agencies. My wife was the Commissioner of Health in the Carlson administration, the second marriage for us, although, and Mabel have been married 21 years, so we've been, my practice principally was representing school districts. I have a arcane knowledge of school finance. I'm one of a handful of people, I suspect, that know the intricacies of school finance. I teach it at the college level. Because I've done so much public policy work, I was very interested in pursuing energy policy. I'm on the gas committee of the National Association of Regulators of Utility Commissions, and I think that gas is going to play a more prominent role in our region because of the acceleration of wind energy. Wind is an intermittent resource, and we're going to have to use more gas, I believe. That challenge, of course, is still out in front of us. It's a wonderful assignment. Rate cases, to some extent, resemble tax policy. I tried the school finance case in the early 90s, and so have a great deal of knowledge of how systems and institutions work, and that both my legal training as a trial lawyer, my public policy work, and my knowledge of large systems, I think, has been very helpful in making a contribution on the energy side. And so it's a wonderful job, wonderful assignment, and I think I'm making a good contribution.
Okay, thank you. Commissioner Workin.
Well, Madam Chair, it's good to be here. And I do have a handout, most of which you probably have, but I wasn't sure, so I thought I'd bring it.
Okay.
Well, I've had a thank you, first of all, for having us come today. I really appreciate it. I know how crammed you are at this time of the year, and it's probably not too much fun to have a late afternoon hearing for this, so thanks. But I've spent just 8 months as a commissioner so far, and the old adage of drinking from a fire hose is somewhat true. There's just a lot of things that I knew would be as they are, but many that I had no clue were part of the position. But I'm absolutely thoroughly enjoying it. The variety of decisions that we have to make are just intriguing. But part of what I'm very grateful is my background prior to coming to the commission and how that has worked into this position. Most of you know that I served as a county commissioner for 8 years prior to coming to the Senate. And I was a county commissioner in Sherburne County, where we are the home of Sherco 1, 2, and 3, so I became significantly familiar with coal plants at that point in time as a commissioner, having toured the plant, having seen all of the good things and bad things in a community that come along with being the home for a large utility. When I was on the county board, we negotiated contracts for a refuse-derived fuel facility, which is also in Elk River, and I was down here as a commissioner advocating for refuse-derived fuel to be categorized as a renewable energy source. And subsequent to that, we also, in our county commission, worked with the landfill, sort of a public-private partnership, to establish a generating facility on the landfill, which has turned into four large generators at this point in time. And ironically, I also live within a mile of one of the more controversial power lines that came across Minnesota, which was in the 1980s. And I remember those controversies and protests and everything else. And oh, and as a commissioner, I served on the state's emergency response system also because we were in close proximity to the Monticello nuclear plant. So I was part of that as well. And all of those things kept me very interested in energy as a whole. And that's sort of been reconfirmed with being on the commission. I've really enjoyed what I've had to learn. I'm intrigued by the new things that are coming quite quickly and in full force, and that things like smart grid and working on all of those issues as well and hearing where they're at. So I've appreciated my time there. And I think in my background as well, having been a business owner for in excess of 20 years, as well as having served in a manufacturing firm and a nursing homes that were all part of Elam Homes Incorporated, served in the cost accounting departments of those two things, and it's been the accounting has been very helpful when I look at some rate case things and things of that nature. So I'm really glad for the varied background that I've had in coming to the commission, and it's been very good to work with the diversity that we have on our board between Commissioner Pugh and his former legislative experience and Commissioner Reha having served as an ALJ, Commissioner Boyd as a chemist, and Commissioner O'Brien's lawyer logic that always comes through in our board meetings. If you remember me here, I was never claimed to be a lawyer, never wanted to be one, and never talked like one, and I still don't. That's up to him. So we do well, I think, with our decisions, and I think the diversity of the board has served the public very well, and we take everything very seriously. I think all of us fully realize, myself especially, that every decision we make has to be developed within the four corners of the docket that we're looking at. And I think, I know how busy you are, and I don't want to take a lot of your time. So I think the thing I want to leave you with is that all of us, and myself especially, I realize the importance of not introducing my own ideology into the position that I'm holding, but instead doing my job within the parameters of the law and carrying out the things that you've set forward in statute for us to be carry out at the commission. And so I'll stand for any questions you have, and thank you for letting us be here.
Thank you. All of you have mentioned the complex decisions you have to make and what goes into making those decisions. And we've all learned a little bit more this year, too. And we've had a number of hearings in which we've talked about rate cases or what goes into rate setting and things like that. And yet, I don't think that we grasp at all how you go about making that decision. And I'm wondering if, I realize it's pretty intricate probably, but I'm wondering if you can tell us a little bit about what goes into making a decision about a rate and how you decide what's a reasonable rate, and is that something that fluctuates with the economy, or how do you make that decision?
Madam Chair, that's a big question. It's a mouthful. The rate cases are very elaborate trials, essentially, where the utilities bring forward testimony regarding their capital investments that they're seeking to move into the rate base and for which they'd seek recovery. Their description of their cost changes that have come about in the period of time since their last rate case. There's an analysis of how fuel prices have changed so that we can set a new base cost of fuel as part of the rate case. Other parties will then intervene, the Attorney General's Office, the Office of Energy Security, sometimes citizens groups, and they will provide their own testimony and their own analysis of those same issues. They go through multiple layers of filings with an administrative law judge in a cross-examination environment and a legal environment. And ultimately, the administrative law judge will distill all that and synthesize a report to us with a suggestion, a recommendation with regard to how to set the rates. The decision in a rate case is actually dozens of small decisions. We completed one recently where I think there were over 60 independent decisions. And it's actually incredibly difficult to lay a dollar amount onto any single, on all of the individual items that you decide in a rate case. At the end of the day, after you've decided on a number of narrow issues, they're sort of coalesced together into an accounting formula, and from that comes the ultimate determination of new rates. So fortunately, I think it's a series of, generally speaking, smaller decisions that cumulatively lead to the change in rates. And there's a lot of confusion among consumers about electric rates or gas rates and rate cases and how they read their bills. And we try to get out and listen to public testimony about rate cases. And more often than not, consumers don't understand the different lines of the bill. And I don't blame them. I don't think I would have understood them until I began to wrestle with them in this position. I think that as a commission, we have some work we might consider doing in trying to offer opportunities to help people understand the bills. Consumers think about bills, not rates. As their bills have gone up, they assume that the utilities have continually received more and more revenue, which isn't necessarily the case. Some parts of the fuel, for example, is a straight pass-through to the consumer, so if the fuel prices go up, so do their bills. And in some sense, when we deal with the public, it's probably better for us to think in bills as opposed to rates and rate setting. But it's a very trying process. Weeks and weeks of energy and a lot of difficult individual decisions.
Well, how does rate of return play into that?
It's certainly a big part of it. Now that's a bit more of a kind of a quasi scientific process. Parties will analyze comparable companies, comparable in size, comparable in business function, and they'll look to the kinds of returns on capital that a variety of companies earn. The OES or the applicant will go through some screening processes to try to find outliers, and from that find an average of what is representative of what other companies return. And then there's an opportunity for them to argue that based on risk, the return on equity should be higher or lower than the comparable pool. It comes from a numerical basis, but there's still a great deal of judgment that goes into setting those values.
And is that something that carries from one utility to another, or do you set it differently for different utilities?
The numbers are decided one rate case at a time. So in a sense, if we're working on utility X, we'll be trying to find a return on equity that fits utility X. Utility Y, who might also be in the state of Minnesota, might have a different mix of commercial and industrial customers. They might have a difference in their generation package or portfolio. And differences like that will play into differences in return on equity. So while there might be a ballpark value that's common, it certainly is not the case that once we decide a number today that number has to carry forward to other utilities tomorrow.
I've seen both Commissioner Wergen and Commissioner O'Brien wanting to jump in, so go ahead.
I'm sure they want to correct me. So.
Well, Madam Chair, it's not a matter of correcting, but there's a ton of minutia that goes into what ultimately is a very big decision. And it's basically almost a year's process from end to end. And it starts as much as, you know, what expenses are allowable to be recaptured, and then breaking them down between transmission, distribution, and generation. And once you have them broke down that way, breaking them down between commercial and residential and general service and all of the other categories. So there's just a huge amount, you might say, of, you could call it negotiating, that goes on, what's right, what's not right, what fits and what doesn't. And return on equity and stuff like that. The other thing that we do need to look at is, it's actually capital structure, to make sure that the utilities are in good financial position to be able to borrow the capital or to seek the capital that they need for future investments. And it becomes a very delicate balance in what keeps the utility sound and viable and what can be withstood by the ratepayer. So you're always trying to balance those interests. The job really is an enormous balancing act of all the interests that are involved.
I thought I'd take you through what I do when a rate case hits my desk. I begin by reading the ALJ report, generally in excess of 100 pages. Then I go read the briefs of the parties. Our staff prepares briefing papers that are distributed to the parties. I read those. Now, on return on equity, I've asked this question at rate hearings of utilities. It seems to me that what they want is something somewhat predictable in a moderate range. They don't want, and the market doesn't want, sudden changes. So we look at comparable companies, reflect on the arguments, you know, these comparables are better than these comparables, and that's just there's high-level lawyering is really what it amounts to, and then you try to make a decision where is a reasonably predictable, safe, moderate place to move the. I might also add that fuel clause adjustments have taken some of the pressure, in my view, off of rate cases. We have several going this year, but we only had a couple last year, and I think there's some correlation between fewer rate cases and more use of fuel clause adjustments. Yeah. Offer that to you for what it's worth.
Thank you. How about what do you see as our state's greatest energy needs, both in the long term and the short term, and what are the competing interests there?
Well, Madam Chair, reaching our renewable energy standard will come in time, and it will come from my understanding, interacting with representatives of the utilities, it will happen as stated in the incremental steps. It remains to be seen how much of gas peaking needs to be incorporated to stabilize that renewable generation to make it reliable, to make the flow of electricity stable on the grid. I think there's some generations to the grid operators as we incorporate more and more of the renewables onto the system. Beyond that, the question is how accurate the forecasts are for growth in electricity consumption. If the growth projections are accurate, then we'll probably need baseload generation from sources other than renewables in order to meet the demand of the public. And then the question will be what kinds of resources do we want to promote or encourage or discourage? And those will be matters that will come back to the legislature. The issues of forecasts are always interesting and difficult questions, and I've had my, I guess, stated differences with modelers over different issues from time to time.
Madam Chair.
Senator Olson.
There's an interesting development in the tax bill where there's a proposal to phase out the personal property tax exemption on peaking plants over the next 3 years, and then there'll be a three-year phase-out. And this is just on the Senate side, but what would your thoughts be on how that might affect the industries you're regulating?
I think.
I don't know that it has an immediate effect on the industries that we're regulating. I think where it'll come into play for us is in the next rate cases that come up, because obviously it has an effect on the revenue and the expenditures of the utility. And again, it goes to the fact that once that policy is in place, then we deal with those policies through dockets and rate cases. And so it comes to us in that form, but not actually in anything prior to that.
Well, how do you weigh the competing interests of environmental concerns and the need for power-generating resources?
You take a lot of Excedrin.
that's a very challenging question, and you, from my standpoint, we want to do what the legislature tells us to do. We want. You people are the people that first wrestle with that issue, and then we try the best we can to do what we believe the legislature wants us to do in that area. That's what I'm personally committed to.
And I'm sorry. I thought you were going to say.
And I think that I think there's growing consensus in a lot of areas that are still nascent that will take some time to develop. But I think that renewable energy is done. That's going to proceed. We've got to figure out, again, as the chair pointed out, how we're going to incorporate gas into that. We still have, we're just getting going on MISO and the regional transmission. There's Upper Midwest transmission initiative as well. And a lot of these things are going to be regional as opposed to state-driven, I believe. We have a large supply of renewable energy in this part of the world, and the rest of the country is going to have some demand for it, I suspect. That'll be a big challenge.
That conflict or that tension, Madam Chair, is not unusual. It's not unique just to the issues you've cited. A lot of the things we do have apparently mutually inconsistent objectives that we try to balance as best we can. But I would agree with Commissioner O'Brien. We're starting from the statutes that are before us, and we are not, in that sense, the high-level policymakers. We're trying to implement as best we can what's been set before us. And I think we find happy media. We find common ground, and I think it's easier to think of the tension of the type you've described on a case-by-case basis as opposed to a larger, broader issue. There might be circumstances where it's very clear that one of these competitors is clearly the better way to go, but that doesn't suggest that there's an overall blanket kind of a policy decision that's imputed inside that decision.
Okay.
I would say this as well, Madam Chair, that it's not – it's of a different kind, but not necessarily of degree. There's inherent tension between ratepayers keeping rates low and access to capital markets. So those are potentially conflicting, and we sort out and do the best we can to find that balance without formula. I mean, you read, think, reflect, listen, and make a decision. And it's about the best we can do.
I think when you ask the general public what's most important to them, I think they would tell you that when they turn the light switch on, they want the lights to come on. And I think the legislature recognized that when the Public Utilities Commission was charged with ensuring a reliable system and then at reasonable rates. And so then we have to take all of those other things, environmental concerns included, and fit it within that picture. It does get to be quite difficult to make all of that fit, because I think we all are aware that all of these changes do have an effect on the cost of your energy that comes to your home. And so the balance is always making sure that we're doing the best for the environment, because none of us want that to be destroyed in any way. I think we all are wanting to make sure that we do the best that we can within all of the reasonable bounds to protect the environment. And so at our board meetings, that is talked about a lot, how to balance those efforts. And I believe we have, again, a really good group of five commissioners that work together to find those solutions that fit within reliable service at reasonable rates and ensuring that the environment is protected as well.
Other questions or comments? Senator Sharon.
Thank you. I appreciate the materials that you gave us, Commissioner. When I read the agency purpose, it says, the statutes direct the Minnesota Public Utilities Commission to protect the public interest in the provision of electric, natural gas, and telephone services. We had quite a discussion, and I'm curious to know if you could respond to a discussion that we had and a lively discussion about public utilities being able to use the earnings or the profits, so to speak, to diversify and invest in other non-public utility companies. And whether or not, the question was whether or not the Public Utilities Commission in its form as it is now is able to protect the public in that situation through their investigation when they're looking at rates or establishing a separation, a wall, a firewall between the public utilities expenses, its costs, and those that might be attributed or created out of the losses that might occur in the other in the other companies that that public utility invests in. And so that's a brief synthesis of some of what we talked about in that discussion. And I asked then, and I would like to hear from you now, about whether or not we can have confidence that you have a process in which you're able to really create that firewall and assure us that the public is not held responsible through rate increases for losses that are occurring because a company invests in other companies.
Well, Madam Chair, Senator Sharon, when we look at the books for utility companies, the ones that are still more connected, let's say, where your question might be appropriate, we examine what's before us in their financial filings. We try to determine at the time of issuing, allowing them to issue bonds or to take debt, for example, that the business purpose is suitable to a more focused business application that's utility regulated as opposed to some other avenue. And from that, we try as best we can to determine that the business purpose of the funds newly raised or profits are staying within the company. We don't, at this time, I guess, have investigative tools that can assure us to the penny that funds are not being used outside of business purposes. I suspect I know about which utility may have prompted some of the conversation. In a rate case, we heard some testimony about similar kinds of issues. We believe that with the tools we have, we can adequately dissect what's in the record financially and to the best of our abilities answer the question in the way you decided. I'm not sure what level of certainty I can provide you on a statistical basis, for example, about what's going on. There are various tools that one could think about using to help make cleaner those kinds of separations. They come at some cost, I guess, one to the next. Some states will use ring fencing laws to try and separate the investment practices of a regulated utility from the broader holding company that they're part of. I mean, that's one way some states have gone about trying to clarify that separation. I'm quite confident we're looking into this in the right way and coming to the right conclusion so that there can be some public confidence in the outcome.
Just one follow-up,
Senator Sharon.
If you thought that there would be something that the legislature should do in regard to that, would you bring that forward and make a request for us to pursue something legislatively, or would you wait for us to be coming forward with something like that?
Madam Chair, Senator Sharon, I speak for myself since I don't know what the correct protocol is. If I thought there was something we needed, I would come to you. And I think we did in small dribs and drabs a little of that this session, trying to improve our position and our standing and our ability to do our job. So speaking for myself, I would most certainly come to you.
I believe Commissioner Boyd represents the view of the commission in that regard.
Other questions or comments? Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We had a chance to chat briefly today, and the question that I raised with the commissioners, and I guess I'd like to raise in the committee, is about the Big Stone decision, because I think that's one of the more significant decisions that I've seen, and the legislature has been very involved in that discussion for several years. And in the climate that we're in now, where the issue of regulating carbon emissions is very much on the short-term horizon, I think it's really important to make sure that we're doing this correctly. And my questions were about the decision. And if you'd like, you could each speak to that, what your thoughts are on why you made the decision. I guess, members, I should just say that the law, you know, the law in Minnesota, I think, is very clear, and this law has been on the books for a long time, that we can't, by law, approve a new, in this case, the transmission line, if the need for the power could be met more cheaply with renewables and efficiency. It should not be approved for a new fossil fuel plant. And so I think that was the gist of the legal argument, whether the need could be met more cheaply for ratepayers through renewables and or efficiency. And I don't believe that that standard was met. So I guess I'd like to hear your opinion about that, please.
Madam Chair, Senator Anderson, before we begin, I want to remind everyone that this is still a pending matter before the commission and through the appeal process. So to the extent we answer, we might be a little bit more vague than perhaps you'd rather we do. Speaking for myself in the way I came to the decision, this was a matter that rested on modeling tools, modeling methods, and whether the modeling tools that were used by the applicants versus some of the interveners were comparable or efficient or sufficient to do the job. Though I would note that there is nothing in statute that even requires modeling to do this job, though it's become a common industry practice. And at the end of the day, with respect to the question of renewables and energy and efficiency and conservation, my conclusion was that the applicants had met the burden of proof with the models they submitted to support the fact that they had met the legal standard. That's a little general, a little high view, and a little broad. I apologize for that.
I would say this, Senator, Madam Chair, Senator. I was frustrated with the war between models, because models essentially are sophisticated mathematical programs that are driven a great deal by the policy assumptions embedded in the models. And so I tried to get independent perspective on some of those embedded policy judgments. I wanted to know, and there was a majority of the commission went along, let's find out what are the likely carbon costs going to be, and then who should bear the risk of those carbon costs. What are the likely construction costs going to be? Who should bear the risk of those costs? What are the likely costs of natural gas and coal as we look at this? Now, I can say that on the demand side, there was no, as far as I'm concerned, clearly the demand was there for the energy, whether it could be met more efficiently with renewables for baseload was a disputed fact. But back up a little bit on the question of the demand itself, the communities that were involved in those parts of our state that were petitioning for that electricity, I think, had that demand. Legitimate debate with respect to whether we could meet it with renewables. Not done generally on baseload, but let's get some more information. And I think that in the process of that extended hearing, a unanimous commission found that a real tough decision. We could close Hoot Lake. We could do carbon offsets. We could protect ratepayers on construction cost and on carbon tax. And we could cite the lines. But a close and hard question, and that's where I came down with respect to the record and the facts and information I had before me.
I joke a little bit that these guys held some of the tough things for when I got there, that they needed help. No, I'm kidding. But I had to approach it somewhat different because of coming basically on the end of the whole scenario. And so what I did is laid out the record and started in reverse of what Commissioner O'Brien talks about. I usually start in date order and go from the beginning and take everything from the initial application through the public hearings and through the rebuttals and surrebuttals and all of those kinds of things. So I read unbelievable stacks of paper and watch DVDs of past commission proceedings and things like that. And then I was fortunate enough to come on in time to hear the reports of the consulting agency that was hired independently by the PUC to answer some of the questions that we had. And starting from the beginning of the record to the end of the record, it seemed very clear to me that the need was established for the transmission. As a matter of fact, there were several points in the record that even talked about the need for this transmission absent Big Stone 2 itself. And so all of those things never erased, even to the end of the whole case, the need for that line to go in. And so it was based on need in my mind.
Madam Chair, could I follow up?
Senator Anderson.
Thank you. Madam Chair, I did read the first ALJ decision, and I believe they reached a different conclusion. And I think the last ALJ decision, as I understand it, concluded that the need for power could be met more cheaply with a combination of wind, with wind backed up by natural gas. That's my understanding of what the ALJ decision was. And if that's the case, I'm not sure how you could justify approving the line.
Madam Chair, Senator Anderson, again, the premise of the ALJ's decision was based on favoring one version of the modeling over another.
So, Madam Chair, I guess you're agreeing with me that was the ALJ's conclusion, but you didn't disagree with which model they chose?
Madam Chair, Senator Anderson, that's correct. In a nutshell, that's correct.
So I guess, Madam Chair, my concern is I think the law is pretty clear, and I think the ALJ's recommendation was pretty clear, and yet the PUC chose to go in a different direction. And that concerns me, and I don't expect, I mean, honestly, I've been on this committee, the Energy Committee, for 17 years, believe it or not. And so I've sat through a lot of confirmation hearings and met a lot of commissioners. And I don't second-guess their decisions in general because I don't think that's our job. We can't second-guess them. And but I think this decision, to me, is the most important one in those 17 years, in my opinion, because it determines the direction that we're going to go as a state in terms of are we going to meet our goals of reducing carbon emissions or are we not. And I think the decision was wrong and that it didn't follow the law. I guess I haven't been convinced otherwise. Commissioner O'Brien, can I ask one more question? When we talked earlier today, you suggested that you have to look at the need for power for the surrounding states as well. And is that something that you think, do you think under Minnesota law, the decision needs to be based on the need of Minnesota ratepayers, or can it be looked at more broadly than that?
No, I think it has to be looked at for our job in the four corners of our state needs. I'm not interested in looking at other states' needs. And so I would say this, that the administrative law judge's first decision was to support it. His second decision was to deny it. So if we're looking just at the ALJ, we've got two decisions that are in opposite. And as I mentioned at the beginning of my remarks, a raging debate over modeling that I wanted to get into the details of. And our consultants helped us a great deal sort that out, and I think we got to a good place. And now there is going to be, I suspect, judicial review, and we'll find out ultimately whether. But I think the fact that it was a 5-0 decision, a very hotly contested, difficult case, we'll see. And we did the best we could, and now we'll. Say we think it's a good decision. We'll see what the courts have to say.
Senator Anderson, it might be interesting to have another discussion when this case is all completed, when it's resolved. Other questions? Senator Carlson.
Madam Chair, I guess this is a question that I'd like to hear from all three of you. I know I've talked with you already about the nature of your background and your view of some of the things that are going on in the world. I'd like to hear what specifically is your position on global warming and what gives you that position? What's your background that gives you the position, and where do you think that this kind of subject is going to go?
Madam Chair, Senator Carlson, I think the issue of the climate variation is undisputed, and the question really at hand is to what extent are we influencing climate? The variation isn't the issue, it's the question of human intervention. And I think that's, again, I don't want to go back to models, but that is a complex issue, and I'm not personally absolutely convinced we have an answer on that myself. I think there's a cautious road to be taken to mitigate against unwanted circumstances, but there is a counterbalancing situation in terms from an energy standpoint about costs and rates and the impact that our mitigation might have on economics and things of that sort. The source of that is I read the same things more or less that most other people do. I besides the newspapers, I'll dabble into the climate journals a little bit to the extent I can, but that reading can get dense and difficult at a fairly quick point. So while my colleagues might think I have a great leg up on them, I'm not that much further along than perhaps an average citizen in that regard. I think it's a question we have to be very careful about, and I think there's a good healthy dose of balance between prevention and whatever we do. I want us to move along with a sense of understanding about what the implications of our actions are. If we ignore it, then we acknowledge the risk we're taking. If we decide to fully mitigate, then I hope that we're fairly honest about a fully described set of costs for what we do. But at the end of the day, I don't create those policies. I don't think that there's an instance I've seen so far where whatever I might feel about an issue has influenced my ability to enact statute and legislation. So to the extent I might disagree personally with a particular piece of legislation, I don't think it's influenced my ability to enact the statutes.
Senator, I believe that global warming is real. I believe that carbon contributes to that warming. I think the great public policy challenge will be in the mitigation of that. I've been on. There's a web page that I look at regularly. It's called Climate Debate Daily. The left-hand margin are the advocates for more aggressive regulation. On the right-hand margin are the global warming skeptics. And so I read both sides. I'm trying to inform myself about it. But at the end of the day, I think that global warming, I'm convinced that it's real and that carbon contributes to it. And then how we mitigate is the great challenge before us.
And Madam Chair, Senator Carlson, we had the opportunity to have this conversation, which I really appreciated you because you were the first person since I took this job that challenged me with that. And I actually appreciate the challenge because I think that always makes us as individuals think, and that's a good thing. I do know and fully recognize that there is climate change. The debate on global warming, scientists that have degrees so incredibly far beyond mine that they're out of my reach disagree on that topic. I do, as Commissioner O'Brien stated, read both sides of the issue. But as I said in your office, it's really, in my opinion, that's not the part that I have to look at. I have to look at what you established in law, and I do know this, that if we can protect our environment in some way and take care of it, it's the right thing to do, regardless of which side you believe on the global warming debate. To protecting the environment is the right thing to do. And so if there are steps that we can take that are reasonable and recognize that we want to protect what we have and keep it good for our children and grandchildren, then that's where we have to go.
Thank you. Any further questions? Otherwise, I need a motion.
I would move that all three of these folks be confirmed. Do I need
let's do them one by one.
Okay. I'll start with Chairman Boyd.
Okay. You're recommending that we you're moving that we recommend Commissioner Boyd for confirmation. On that motion, Senator Anderson.
Madam Chair, and I've really been struggling with this decision because, as I said, I've never voted against a commissioner in 17 years, and I don't believe it would be right to make my vote based on whether they agree or disagree with my personal views. That's not the point. I think the point is, and so I guess I'm going to have to say respectfully, I admire these three individuals, and especially Senator Worgen, whom I've served with, is a very decent person, and I personally like her. But I just think that I just can't vote for them at this time. And I just need to say why, because I know that's a pretty significant decision. And I guess I've stated already that I think that this isn't about my personal views. It's about following the law. And our law is very clear. And this law was passed a number of years ago by the late Senator Janet Johnson, who I greatly admire. And that law says, as I've stated already, that we shouldn't be the legislature has expressed its intent in this law that we shouldn't be approving new fossil fuel facilities if we can meet the need more cheaply for our ratepayers with renewable energy or efficiency. Now, that's a pretty strong test. That's not just saying we want them to do renewables and efficiency. We want them to do it only if it better serves the interests of ratepayers and it's cheaper. And I think the record in this case and the ALJ decision indicated they had not met that requirement of law. And I think this is a fundamental decision about integral to our energy policy right now, that about the future of our state and our world. And so I can't support the commission at this time, so I just wanted to make that statement with all due respect.
Other comments? Senator Carlson.
Yeah, Madam Chair and members of the committee, I guess I have some problems also. Only a couple of weeks ago, we took away the ban for nuclear power. And when I was on the floor and spoke about it, and I support removing that ban, what I said and what I still feel is that this should not be political. This should be technical. And the technical decisions are in the hands of these folks. Obviously there's a lot of things that they have to weigh, but it takes, we're handing this to some of the premier people that we need to have in these positions. They have to be someone that we can trust. They have to be someone who has the background to be able to make these decisions. And each of them is an equivalent of the other. They are highly paid. They're highly placed. They need to reflect, I guess, that kind of background that we can trust and that we can put our trust in for the future of Minnesota. These are appointments, and unfortunately there tends to be politics that get involved in these appointments. And what I'm saying here is that I can't vote for all of these people. I think that we have a requirement in especially this committee to follow our values. And I'm hoping that that's all understood and that my vote will be also understood.
Okay. I'd like to comment also. I perhaps maybe disagreed with your decision also. On the other hand, I realize that I don't have all the information you have, and I have seen from your presentation that you're all thoughtful people and that you have deliberated at length about this and gone through a rather significant process in making the decisions you make. And based on that, I realize that I am not privileged to have all the information you had when you made your decision. And while I may disagree with what your decision is, I still respect the process that you underwent in making that decision. And as I really would like to have a decision with you, I mean a discussion with you when this case is resolved. And I will be supporting all three candidates at this time. Are there other comments? Well, then let's vote on
Madam Chair.
Senator Jungbar.
I guess I just want to make a quick comment that when you look at the backgrounds are wide and varied. And I think in this kind of process, what we're looking for is not only background that has expertise, but the kind of people that will sit and study all these issues to great detail, as you mentioned. And I think that takes a special kind of person. So I support all three of them because I think they all might come from a little different background and a little different thought process. But we need that varied view, and especially, you know, having worked with Senator Wergen, I'm going to be very honest that I was concerned with her background in the area specifically, but I don't think anybody works as hard as Senator Wergen, Commissioner Wergen does to understand things, and I think that's the key. Having worked alongside of her, I really looked, and I watched over her shoulder. Honestly, I was watching what you were doing at the PUC because I was a little concerned there. Though I knew you worked hard on everything else, I just really wanted to be certain that you would put in the time and effort required to make those right decisions. And I've seen that, and I've seen it in your knowledge of what's going on there today. And I've had a chance to sit down with the others as well, and I back them all because I think we need a little bit of difference in each member in order to have that kind of balance and make sure that we're looking at each issue and that they're challenging each other to do the best job, and I think we do have those kind of people on the board.
Any further comments? And Senator Alcine renews his motion that we recommend Commissioner Boyd for reappointment. All those in favor, please signify by stating aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. I need another motion. Senator Carlson.
Madam Chair, I move that Commissioner O'Brien be reconfirmed.
Okay. Senator Carlson moves that Commissioner O'Brien be recommended for confirmation. Any discussion? All those in favor, please signify by stating aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails.
Senator Brendan-Solan, and I'd like to recommend that we recommend Commissioner Wergen
for appointment.
For an appointment.
On that motion, any discussion? Then all those in favor, please signify by stating aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No.
Motion prevails. Well, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you, members.
Congratulations. Okay. Our next meeting will be on Tuesday, April 28th, and for your information, this will be a joint meeting with the House Energy Policy Committee, and we will be hearing on some experts on cap and trade who are coming in from Washington. In addition, we will be receiving a report from the university on cap and trade, and we will be hearing from our representatives to the cap and trade, the governor's, the Midwest Governors Association meeting on cap and trade. So that meeting is next Tuesday.